not condoning what I did, but I had an affair. I was just like, you know what? You don't want to be with me. We love solving problems as long as they're not our own. There's a ripple effect of pain in the wake of your poor decisions that occurs. And that's our first responder community, man. We do amazing things for other people at the risk of ever doing anything amazing for ourselves. But as long as we surround ourselves with crazy, then crazy becomes the new normal. If you don't love you, how do you love somebody else? I'm asking a lot from you. I'm going to show you by my actions that I am somebody that's worthy of that second chance.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with 30-year law enforcement veteran, author, and law enforcement life coach, John Kelly. He's an expert on breaking the cycle of self-destruction, and we'll be speaking about the difficult topic of infidelity and rebuilding trust in first responder marriages. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV. All the podcast platforms, bbsradio.com. Check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with John after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers.
With vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Wimley, LCSW, EMTB.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
So we'd like to welcome back our friend, John Kelly. He's a 30-year law enforcement veteran, and he's a law enforcement life coach. John's an expert on breaking the cycle of self-destruction, and through his book, his speaking, and his podcast, John honestly speaks about the obstacles he's encountered in his career and his life, and overcoming these obstacles made it absolutely necessary for him to show our brothers and sisters how you can fall, sometimes repeatedly, and keep getting back up. John developed a wellness and leadership program and a podcast called Sometimes Heroes Need Help, that addresses personal, professional, financial, physical, and mental health of the first responder. John's also the author of Surviving Self-Inflicted Wounds, A Deputy's Life of Redemption. John, welcome back.
Hey, brother man. It is always, always, always awesome to sit down and speak with you. Thank you for having me back on the show.
Well, thank you, and appreciate you toughing it out. I know you got a little cold going on.
Oh, I know. Listen, of all the things, man, I got the bug. But I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks.
Excellent. You've gone into depth. I've heard you speak about this at a conference. You've gone into depth about it in your book, on your podcast. What motivates you to speak about this topic of infidelity?
You know, David, it's like all the things that we suffer from, right? They're all self-inflicted, and there's so much shame that goes along with it that, you know, why would you want to talk about it? But see, that's the key, though. The key to not repeating the cycle, the key to not continuing to make the same predictable missteps and mistakes, the key to all of that, right, whether we're talking about suicide or infidelity or alcoholism or self-care, is to talk about it and to remove that perception that there's shame that has to be carried with that. And I think so that's really, if we ever expect this thing of ours to be what it should be, which is a healthy endeavor, we got to talk about the things that, you know, we can't always be high-fiving, man. We can't always just celebrate the wins. Sometimes we need to talk about the losses And it's through those discussions that we get the wins.
Well, you're leading the charge in terms of doing that. And I'm sure it's having that impact on people's lives who really need to know that it's okay to talk about it, or it's okay to seek help. It's that there are, I guess the main thing is that there is solutions, right? There are ways to overcome these obstacles that we find in our lives, professional, personal, and you're living proof.
Yeah, you know, this is what happens, David. I think a lot of times we relinquish the power that we have. You know, when we get involved in this line of work, I'll just say the first responder line of work, because it really doesn't matter whether you're carrying a gun or a hose. I mean, it's public service, it's sacrifice, it's all those things. You get fed this line, and it's done very unassumingly, like over time. Every movie you've seen, right? Every conversation, you never see the cop that's happy with 2.3 kids, white picket fence, and he's absolutely loving life. That person is not portrayed anywhere in the media or in movies, right? So you get this little seed gets implanted, I think, that one, it's okay to be as dysfunctional as we turn out. Like, well, that's just the way it's supposed to go. You're supposed to get married 2 and 3 times. You're supposed to have a problem with alcohol. You know, every movie, every guy, you know, there's a battle between him and his ex-wife, and he's, you know, on the fringe, and he's making questionable decisions, not only at home, but at work. And like, you start believing that movie that, like, that's supposed to be, like, that's acceptable for that to be your life. I don't think I'm off the mark with that, David.
No, I think, you know, unfortunately, public perception is based on all that, you know, what they see in the movies, the TV, and in the media, right? It's and part of that, I guess we must perpetuate it, right?
I think we do. I think that ends up becoming some sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that, like, oh, this is, you know, so I'm normal if I have a couple divorces under my belt and I have issues with substance abuse and this and that. That's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm screaming, man, like, no, turn the TV off. Like, stop. You get to write this chapter. You get to write this story, and it doesn't have to be full of dysfunction and pain. And, you know, I think part of taking back control is acknowledging where we misstep, why we make the mistakes that we do, why we make the decisions that we make, and in an attempt to live a life worth living, man, discuss it and then offer up real practical solutions, right, that can be implemented. You know, you don't need a master's degree in psychology from Harvard to take back control of your life.
Ready to improve your fundraising efforts and elevate your organization's communications through direct mail with Ari Lawler? Let Ari Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. With a proven track record of assisting fire departments, police unions, PBAs, churches, schools, and more in raising much-needed funds through unique strategies and expertise. Technologically advanced, their production line and personnel are experts in navigating all the latest postal service regulations and mail requirements. Simply put, Ari Lawler will save you money on your next fundraising campaign. With over 35 years of experience, Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing are leaders in fundraising through direct mail. They too are first responders and understand your needs better than any other direct mail marketing company. And they're a family business who take pride in offering their clients the finest service at the most competitive rates. Experts in design, print, and mail, they do it all, and they get results. Experience the Ari Lawler difference. Check out their website, arilawler.com, or give them a call today. Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing. Raising money has never been so easy.
And part of you know, what you're the living example of is being able to have a really vital life after the job, right? In so-called retirement, although we're not retired, we have another chapter. But you know, you've dealt with these things, these demons, if you will, and overcome them, and now you can pay this forward, you know, in this chapter of your life, which I think is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's the goal, David. Right? I mean, listen, not everybody needs to touch the stove to know it's hot, right? So, you know, there are some of our brothers and sisters that no matter what we do in a preventative, proactive capacity, they've got free will and they're going to make decisions. And maybe not all those decisions are going to be in their ultimate best interest. And that's okay. But there are a bunch of our brothers and sisters that, you know, are pretty quick on the uptake that, you know what, I'm seeing some of these behaviors early on. And you know what, man, I don't want to be that guy. So let me take a proactive approach to my health, my mental health, my emotional health, my relationship health. And let me do something about it before that slide, right? The slide that we talk about that we all experience, mm-hmm. before it becomes an avalanche. And see, we have the ability to do that. But see, we're not stupid, man. We know. We don't need anybody to come to us to tell us that we're off the rails or we're making bad decisions, right? You know, when you can't look yourself in the mirror, that's a really good indicator that you're not living your best life. Right. So, you know, the part comes, well, then how do we make that connection so we can stop getting involved in behaviors that are unacceptable, that we find extremely problematic within our own moral compass, and start really making decisions and actually acting in a way that we're proud of, you know, that shame and guilt, you know, those are things that are in our rear view, that we can start being proud of the people that we are and the decisions that we make and the life that we're making for ourselves and our family. Right. I threw a lot at you there, man, but it really, we make it so much harder than it needs to be.
Well, yeah, I think you're speaking about integrity too. It's like the kind of thing where you can wake up and look yourself in the mirror and know that you're, you know, living life with integrity. And John, I'd love to kind of cover your story from the early parts to, you know, latter. And you talk about this in your book. I think it's an amazing chapter. Let's kind of go back on the timeline to your life growing up.
Was
there
influences
that were kind of shaped who you became later as an adult and a husband?
Oh my goodness. You know, that's a great question, David, because I didn't really know how much of an impact your childhood has on who you eventually become. You know, I've learned so much at the end, you know, I mean, it's like, I wish I knew these things, you know, so I could have been aware, right? I could have been aware. Grew up, listen, and I gotta say, I think I grew up in a really loving home. I think, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so situations that you can look back and go, wow, man, that's pretty dysfunctional. That's pretty messed up. It was normal because it was packaged with a bow of love, right? And so when you grow up in an alcoholic household, you try to always remember the good and you block out the bad because that's how you get through that. And so my dad was an alcoholic, amazing provider, you know, put two kids through college, worked two jobs. I mean, the work ethic, like I inherited some things from my dad and one of them was the work ethic. Yeah. The other things were the infidelity and the alcoholism. So I had to separate from a couple and embrace another. And so when you grow up in that household, and you know, I wish I had a conversation with my dad of substance, because I never did, man. And he's since passed. And so I reflect upon that I never had a man-to-man talk with my dad. And that was as much his fault as it was mine. But when you're in that environment, like crazy becomes the new normal. So getting woken up every weekend night by screaming, you know, you think that's normal because that's just the way it is. And you don't realize until you get older that that's not cool. And so very early on, I think equated discussion with the potential for conflict and not in a really good way. Right. So right. I see my mom and dad yelling at each other And like, I don't want that in my house. So I take it to an extreme as a grown man. What's the best way, David, not to have a disagreement in the house?
Just don't say anything.
You don't talk. You don't have a discussion. You can never get upset and have an argument if you don't talk. And that was my fix for everything, David. So it took me a while to figure out why I was like, I thrived at work. You want conflict? Oh my God, I can't. I love it, right? Throw me in the middle of it, because what ends up happening, and I think I can speak generally for most of our first, we love solving problems as long as they're not our own, yep. Right? We're experts at figuring out really complex issues for somebody else. Trying to figure that shit out for yourself, man. Don't be setting an egg timer, right? It's going to take you forever and a day if you ever even address your own issues. So we get involved in a profession that rewards us for solving other people's problems at the expense of ever solving our own. And that was me. Mm-hmm. And so when in my marriage, I would never discuss anything. If there was an issue that I was not good with, or if there was an opinion that I thought should be aired, if it had the potential in my mind for turning into an argument, I wouldn't talk, because I don't want to ruin the moment, right? I don't want to disrupt. I don't want to. And what you end up doing is, you end up creating instead of having a little fire to put out, you show up once the house is fully engulfed. That's when you show up. And right now you're not saving anything once the house is fully engulfed. Yeah,
three alarms.
Yeah, man. Three alarms. Forget it. Just keep it from spreading, right? But basically try to keep it from spread, because we lost the structure. Mm-hmm. And that was my marriage, man, because of decisions that I made not to talk, David. And so I give a couple examples in the book. I think the one when I present and I talk about, like, when my mom would call, and everybody's got I think an in-law story, right? And so when I talk about my mom calling and my wife not wanting to talk to her, the solution to that should have been very simple. Every time my mom calls, Nicole doesn't want to talk to her, the solution should be, hey, Nicole, did something happen between you and mom that you don't want to talk to her? I mean, David, it could have been as simple as that.
Yeah, just get it out in the open.
Do I need to talk to my mom about something? Why don't you want to talk to her? That's all it had to be. I never have that conversation. I let it go. Because I don't want to get into it. Because if I get into it, it's going to get ugly. And if I had gotten into it, David, my wife would have told me that she is in the service industry and she spends all day talking to people. And at the end of the night, the last thing in the world she wants to do is be on the phone. And I would have went, that makes 200% sense to me. And then I would have said, can you give her 1 minute of your time? Because it would make my heart feel good. And I know it would make – and my wife would have been like, oh, shit. Yeah, certainly I would, right? I mean – problem resolved. I don't ever have that conversation, David. And I know the listener's going, that's not a big deal. That's the first wedge. And see, it doesn't ever start as a big deal, right? Your indifference starts very slowly over things that are really by themselves non-issues. Mm-hmm. But it starts setting a precedent for you to stop caring. And that was me, brother. It was that, and it was my inability to communicate about anything. And so then when we really do have an issue, like when we have something heavy duty that we need to discuss, if I won't talk about the little things, what makes you think in a million years I'll ever talk about the big things? It's just not going to happen. And so there comes a point in our relationship where, and listen, by no stretch of the imagination, the listener should know, I was a real piece of work. Alcoholic, addict, adulterer. Listen, I was not an easy person to live with. But there came a point in our relationship where Nicole didn't want to be intimate with me anymore. She was done with me. And, you know, listen, I didn't get married to have less sex. You know, little 411 for you there. You know, that wasn't part of the contract. And so that's a problem, man. When a couple is not intimate or, you know, there's issues in the bedroom, you know, like that's time for like a marriage counseling and a therapy. That's time to do a deep dive on why and how we fix. I was never going to talk about that, man. Mm-hmm. And so I did what I thought was the easiest thing to do. I'm like water, man. I took the path of least resistance. Not condoning what I did, but I had an affair. I was just like, you know what? You don't want to be with me. We don't need to argue about it because I'll go someplace else.
Derek Hanley here, a photographer, a videographer, a veteran combat medic.
Derek Hanley is with us today.
We have on the line with us Derek O'Hanley. What a remarkable book. Obviously, you had no idea when you embarked on this journey of embedding with paramedics and, you know, frontline responders. There was no way to know that a worldwide pandemic was on its way.
His goal was to document the day-by-day life-saving that they do. And now you can experience what it was like.
He's done a book that should be a coffee table book in homes and offices. You know, something in the office that somebody's going to pick up, look at, and be moved by. This is the book.
Our military protects us overseas. Our first responders are the ones who protect us at home. And we need to start thinking about what we can do to take care of medics like we do for our military.
The book is Photos from the Front Line.
Photos from the Front Line.
Photos from the Front Lines.
Photos from the Front Lines.
So that's dope. It's DOHP.net, and you can find Derek's book there.
I got to tell you, and this is what I think happens, right? I've done a lot of thinking about this. You have an affair. In your mind, I think you think it's going to be a temporary thing just so we can smooth over some of the rough edges. Like just so I can get things back on track at home. Like I'm just going to do this, to get by. And what ends up happening, man, you know, if the listener hasn't figured out, affairs end. And things blow up and you get caught and everybody gets hurt. Even the people you didn't think were going to get hurt. And I think there's a cycle that happens. And I can I go into it? The cycle?
Please do. Yeah.
So there's something wrong at home. There's a need not being met. I'm not pointing or whose fault it, there's a need not being met, whether it's my fault or it doesn't matter whose fault it is. There's a need not being met. And that could be on the spouse, the other spouse's, you know, responsibility as well. Somebody's not meeting an emotional, physical need of the other. Mm-hmm. And so you, instead of doing the hard work of addressing that and having a tough conversation and fixing you, because that's hard to do. You don't fix you. You go, you know what, man? I'm gonna get this need met by somebody else till things get back on track. And you do that. You step out. And then what ends up happening is you start living two lives. And then things at home start getting better. Because that other need's being met. Uh-huh. So you're a nice person to be around, right? Because you're not, screaming inside anymore. And then guess what happens? Your spouse starts recognizing in a good way this new you. And that relationship at home gets back on track. but this other one that's going on. And then those two worlds can't coexist. And what ends up happening is you end up destroying two lives. That's what you end up doing. And so what ends up happening, brother, is that, like I said, there's a ripple effect of pain in the wake of your poor decisions that occurs. And you know, I'm no different, man. I hurt so many people during this time in my life. And, you know, if we're being honest, this is a thing that I almost killed myself over. Wow. Right. So I think it's important to talk about why we make these decisions, right? And the importance of making informed decisions, because these decisions that I made, they were not informed. They were emotional. And I think you and the listener will agree, when we make emotional decisions, they're never good decisions, man. Doesn't matter what the topic is, man. And so I think at the end of the day, it's important for us to understand why we do what we do, put some things in place to keep us from making emotional decisions, and then give us some skill sets to keep our relationships healthy so we don't go down that road. And you know, it doesn't have to be rocket science. It's not this, you know, you don't need to go to the Dalai Lama and get enlightened in all this. You just need to live a different life. And it starts with, this is going to sound corny, brother, it starts with loving you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we think that, well, somebody else is good. You know, if I get involved with this person, they're going to be the key to my happiness.
Right.
Yikes. Listen. You got to love your key to your happiness needs to be you all alone in a room, walking down the beach by yourself. If you don't love you, how do you love somebody else? And so it sounds corny. And I know, I don't have any formalized training in any of this, David. It's just life experience. And I think that when I married Nicole, she didn't need fixing. Every woman that I had been involved with up until Nicole was a shit show. I was like, John to the rescue. You know, I'm showing up on a white horse with the shiny armor, man. I'm going to fix this woman. And, you know, what issues does she have going? It was perfect. I had a full-time job. Well, what happens when you connect with somebody that doesn't need fixing?
Yeah, we don't know what to do.
Not only that, but then – excuse me, if I don't have to fix you, that maybe means that now it's time I need to fix me. And that's a problem because I don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that starts and can start a spiral of self-destruction because there's nobody else to point to that needs to, the work needs to be, you know, you have to do the work on you now. And I think that that's a problem for a lot of us, that at the end of the day, as long as we have somebody to fix, we're good. There are only so many hours in the day. And if I can trick everybody around me into believing that I am this awesome person because I'm great at fixing other people, then my unacceptable behavior doesn't really get examined. Because I'm doing all these great and wonderful things for all these other people. And that's our first responder community, man. Mm-hmm. We do amazing things for other people at the risk of ever doing anything amazing for ourselves. And so having that realization, that come to Jesus moment where, you know, you're the problem, that's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of us. Because we've never had to come face to face with that problem. You know, all the problems we've come up against have been external up until this point. Now you look in the mirror and you see the problem, man. The problem's looking back at you. And that demands accountability. That demands change. Yeah. And so that happened to me with my alcoholism, with my addictions, with my infidelity. And I would say that of all of them, the infidelity was the worst. You know, well, you know, Dave, for every first responder that gets assaulted in law enforcement by a bad guy, gets killed by a bad guy, 2 to 3 take their own lives. Mm-hmm. And it's not much different across all of our services. Of those 2 to 3 that kill themselves, the number one reason why is over infidelity or a breakup of a relationship. And so this isn't one of those things, David, where we can just hope that people figure out, right? There's no manual. There's no course designed in law enforcement or the fire service to help you enhance and give you skill sets and tools to better your relationship at home. It doesn't exist.
Right.
It's the number one reason why we're not waking up, brother, by our own hand. And we won't, not only do we not talk about it, but we actually condone infidelity.
How does that play out? Like, what does that look like?
Well, it looks like, listen, if you knew, David, that I was if you knew that I was playing Russian roulette behind the firehouse, if you knew I had a 5-shot revolver and I was putting one live round in it, spinning the chamber, putting the gun to my head and pulling the trigger, you would run back there, smack the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. You would intervene immediately. What are you doing? This is insane, right? Those would be the words out of your mouth. This is insane. You might even Baker Act me, right? What the hell is wrong with you? It's an extreme example. I'll give you that. But if knowing what we know, if you have a partner who's having an affair and you know he's not making informed decisions, right? He's making emotional decisions because he's spiraling and he's got a lot going on, man. Do you smack him? Do you run back behind the firehouse and grab him and throw him up against the wall and say, "What are you doing?" I don't know that we have that, but listen, the outcome can be the same, can it not?
Absolutely, and I think it falls into the same categories as, you know, one of your coworkers or friends is having a problem with alcohol or some other destructive behavior that, you know, I mean, just because of what you said, John, because there's a correlation between infidelity and suicide, that's the reason right there.
Responder Resilience is your place for insightful discussions for emergency services professionals, including law enforcement, EMS, fire service, 911 telecommunicators, animal control, rescue squads, K-9 officers, corrections, trauma-informed therapists, and agency leaders. We bring you leading experts and influencers in emergency services, sharing knowledge and tools to improve the culture of wellness and to inspire excellence in leadership. Tune in live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the weekly premiere on YouTube and Facebook. Or stream episodes anytime on ResponderTV.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Stay current with hot topics, informative content, and get valuable insights on how to lead a healthier life both on and off the job by subscribing to us on YouTube and Facebook. Responder Resilience is committed to our family of public safety professionals. Remember to like and subscribe today.
There's a couple of dynamics at play, David. So in order for me to check you, right, in order for me to be a brother to you, whether it's intervening if you're drinking too much or having an affair, I can't be doing the same thing, man. Mm-hmm. Right? See, sometimes we surround ourselves with dysfunction because we know we're never going to be judged in that environment, right? If everybody I'm running with has a piece on the side and hits the bottle a little too heavy, I'm safe amongst friends, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's sometimes why we close off relationships from people that aren't in the first responder community. See, because an outsider would look at that behavior and go, "What's wrong with you? That's not normal." But as long as we surround ourselves with crazy, then crazy becomes the new normal.
Right.
It's that simple. So you need not to be doing that. You need to be living a better life than me to be able to call me out on that inappropriate behavior. And that takes, listen, it takes having tough conversations with our brothers and sisters. And I can tell you, I had a friend, his name is Steve, and he knew what I was doing. He knew I was having an affair, and he saw me spiraling. I had some other things. Listen, nothing happens in a vacuum. There's always several other things going on in one's life to bring them to a place where they make repeatedly poor decisions, and I'm no different. I'm being investigated. I'm suspended at work. I'm looking to go to prison. I've got all these other things going on. I'm abusing steroids and I'm having an affair. I am the poster boy for somebody killing themselves. And everybody knew it. I had one friend who came to me and said, you know, you're killing yourself in 6 months over this. Have that conversation with a friend, David, right? Because you got to love somebody unconditionally to have that conversation, because that could be a friendship-ending conversation, could it?
Exactly.
And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you don't even see it, man. You don't even see what you're doing. You don't see what you're doing to yourself. You don't see what you're doing to your family, your wife and your daughter, your friends. He says, I don't even know who the fuck you are anymore. Now you got my attention, right? Now this is going to, I'm like, well, let me have it, man. And so when we start having those tough conversations with our brothers and sisters from a place of caring and love and not judging, right? Because if we start judging people, they put up the wall, they put up the defenses, and we're not going to move the needle with that,
yeah,
right?
You're not going to be receptive.
Not going to be receptive, right? So he said, you're eating your gun in 6 months. And I don't want to see that happen. And talk to me. And he was like, you know that that Scrooge movie, The Ghosts of Christmas Future. You know, there's the three: past, present, and future, right?
Yep.
Well, he was like, this is you in 6 months, man. Once you realize what you've done, the gravity of what you've done. See, I had not left Nicole yet, and but I was in this, for somebody who has always known what to do, I had no idea what to do. And I was struggling. I was feeling very hopeless. And what Steve did was he gave me some clarity and hope. Clarity and hope. Powerful thing. Clarity and hope. And he said, somebody else is marrying Nicole once you leave her. She's a beautiful woman. You got to be okay with that. You got to be okay with her moving on, because that's just going to happen. You got a daughter together. Like, you're going to see her. I'm like, I'm not okay with her moving on. I'm like, that's my Nicole. Not thinking rationally, right? And then he says, you know, somebody else is going to be raising Bree. That's your little girl. He said, you'll still see her and all that, but somebody else is tucking her in at night. And you got to be okay with that, because if this is the decision that you – and I was like, man, I not only am I not good with that, I've got a bigger problem with that than I do with Nicole moving on. That's my daughter. Mm-hmm. He said, well, you know, you've been making all these emotional decisions, man. None of them have been well thought through. Start making informed decisions. Start – making decisions that benefit you. And see, this is the part where, you know, listen, you can get a divorce. Like, that's not the end of the world. Sometimes it's necessary for two people to get a divorce. Sometimes it's very empowering to start with a clean slate and right some past wrongs. And maybe you're a better parent and spouse as friends than you were being married. That's completely a real dynamic, right? So I'm not saying that you can't get a divorce. But what I am saying is that whatever you do, it needs to be an informed decision. You can't be making emotional decisions, because they're never good decisions. And so, you know, that morning After that conversation, I went back to my Nicole. She had never thrown me out of the house. We didn't share a bed, but her point of view was, if you want to leave this family, that's your decision. I'm not making that decision for you. See, because it would have been easier if she made that decision for me, right? I could have blamed her. But she didn't. And she said something else that I think is really important for the listener to hear. She said, I own some responsibility in this relationship. I own a part of it. I'm responsible for its health. It may not be 50-50. It may not. It maybe it's 99% your fault and 1% my fault on where we got to where we're at. She says, but I got to own my 1%, and I'm willing to be better. I'm willing to be better. David, you should be talking to her and not me, man. She's a strong woman, but she's so, you know, we talk about having emotional intelligence. She realized that if we're in a relationship, like it's a team. And if the team wins or loses by the performance of everybody on the team, not just one person. And so she was willing to be better. You know, and how can I not be willing to be better, man, with that kind of support? And I know I'm very fortunate and blessed because there are many a first responder and brother or sister that has come to me and has said, my spouse, my ex is done. They don't want anything to do with me. And for that, man, my heart aches because I think that there was an opportunity at some point for everybody to own a little bit of the problem. And then I think if everybody just takes a little bit of ownership, then we can right the ship. We can right the wrong. That's hard to do if all parties involved aren't willing to be responsible for the role that they played and where the relationship ultimately gets to, right?
Right. And do the hard work and have the hard conversations.
Yeah, man.
You know, that's some of the most painful moments I know in my life, you know, those conversations and looking at, you know, it could go either way, right? It could be if we don't fix this, if we don't figure it out, we're on a bad trajectory downwards.
Right.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
Yeah, and I think, listen, and that's, again, go into counseling, go into marriage therapy. I mean, my wife, there were times she looked across from me like, I fucking never knew. Like, right? Because you don't ever communicate. You don't ever have a conversation. And you're just expecting somebody to know.
Right. And it's the Venus and Mars thing too, right? Like, cause what we're talking about is a whole different world.
Right. You know, that's why, David, when I do my presentations, I talk about that, those aspects of communication. I talk about Dr. Gary Chapman in Love Languages. Like, you know, I throw it out there. He goes, you know, when do we find out about Gary Chapman and the love languages? You find out about him in marriage counseling. Right? Like, but these are things, these are skills and things that we need to know, right, before we hit the wall. Like, you need to know how your spouse receives love from you. And if it's acts of service by doing little things and not words of affirmation, and you've been telling her you love her 100 times a day and it's not moving the needle, and you don't know that if you just pick up around the house and throw a load of laundry in, that makes her heart sore. You don't know that because you don't know Gary Chapman. You know, we wonder why, man, sometimes, you know, we find ourselves in these places. And, you know, and listen, my relationship with Nicole is a carbon copy of everyone's. We're not unique, man. And if we can learn that, you know, there's a better way to move forward, There's a better way to communicate. There's a better way to be mindful, you know, not buzzwords. Look at buzzwords. You know, the time to become resilient isn't when you're drowning. You know, yeah. You don't become resilient swimming with an anchor around your neck. It doesn't happen then. The time to become resilient is before the storm, right? To do the preparation. And so part of all of this, David, when we talk about our relationships, both at home and at work, and our finances and our physical and mental health, it's about given skill sets and understanding the importance of self-care before it's too late. Because, you know, we all experience a slide, right? All of us. John Kelly experiences a slide all the time. Yep. The key is recognizing it and then immediately addressing it, right? Keeping the slide from becoming the avalanche. And I think, you know, that's the second chapter, the second chapter's mission. You said something in the intro about me breaking the cycle of self-destruction. I never looked at it that way, David, but I that's an awesome observation on your part. I've never looked at it that way, but that's really what I'm trying to do in this second chapter, man.
Yeah. Well, part of that's got to be self-awareness, and part of that's got to be tools that, like you said, we don't necessarily pick them up, you know, in advance. Sometimes we have to hit that low bottom out place where there's no place to go but up, and we have to do something. It's like a right. desperation moment. Okay, I'm willing to do anything to get out of this shit. And that's when we go, okay, how can I fix this? And
right.
there's so much to all of this, John, and particularly I think the most powerful piece is that, you know, all of your challenges you have overcome, but you have a way of portraying that and sharing that shows that there is hope and that people, all of us can overcome these obstacles and become better for it. I wanted to kind of touch on something that I think would be really interesting, and that's like, how do you make amends? You created this situation in a marriage. How do you approach that and deal with forgiveness and acceptance of what's going down?
That's a great question. It's got less to do with you and more to do with your partner. But because I firmly believe that you are the key, if you're the problem, you're the solution, right? That's what I say. So in order, Nicole's biggest fear in working it out was that she was putting herself in a position to be hurt again. Her biggest fear wasn't, what am I going to do? Where am I going to live? What's going to happen with Brianna? None of those things occupied her brain and were a cause of anxiety. The biggest source of anxiety is if I start the process of forgiving, I give him an opportunity to hurt me again. And I said, so that was a conversation. David, she's sitting across from me and says, if I forgive you, I put myself in a position to be hurt by you again. Or I can just walk away and never be hurt by you again. I got to convince a woman that she can trust me now after what I've done. How does that work? Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I'm asking a lot. I'm asking a lot from you. And I'm going to show you by my actions that I am somebody that's worthy of that second chance. I said, I haven't always been a piece of shit. Haven't always made poor decisions. There was a time when you loved me right? There was a time. And I said, that didn't happen overnight, you falling in love with me. And so I said, I think, you know, things don't get broken overnight and they don't get fixed overnight. I said, so if you're willing to take this second chapter journey with me, this round two, if you're willing to go round two with me, I'm going to show you every day that I can be better than I was the day before for our family, for you, for me. I'm going to do a better job of taking care of me. See, because a lot of this was me just not taking care of me, David. Mm-hmm. And I know people are going to scoff maybe at that, but that's why the importance of self-care is so crucial. And for, because when you stop taking care of yourself, you lose the capacity to love anyone else. And somebody might say, well, that's a convenient excuse. You know, well, it's not until you live it that you see the truth in that statement, is that by you not taking care of you, by you not practicing self-care and showing up to be the best that you can be, you cheat everyone in your life from experiencing all the best that it has to offer. And so I started doing the hard work of fixing me. And the one of the hardest things I ever had to do was to actually, you know, peel back a few layers and start and finding out the whys of my behavior. And then doing something about it. And I think that when Nicole saw me doing the hard work of fixing me, I think that that was a very reassuring signal that things were going to be different. I didn't go out and buy her flowers or cards and shit. Mm-hmm. Fuck it, that doesn't move the needle. That's nonsense. I went to therapy. I went to therapy and I stopped engaging in behaviors, not infidelity, right? Obviously that's dead, but my non-confrontational ways, I would have conversations, David. I would have disagreements. I would voice an opinion. I would have an opinion. I would be okay to get into an argument. And people are going, what's the big deal? I argue with my wife all the time. Good. That's good that you argue all the time, right? You know, it was John and Nicole. They're the best couple. They never argue. No, not a good sign. No, if you're not arguing, somebody is not contributing to the conversation. That is not a healthy relationship, right? And so she saw the change in me, in my behavior. And that, I think, helped her buy into the fact that things were going to be different. So it was actions and not words, David.
Yeah, you made the commitment. And John, your story is amazing. I know it's going to touch people. And I did want to refer our listeners to the fact that you've done, I think, a two-part podcast episodes with Nicole talking about this, probably getting into deeper levels on some of this. But talk about the podcast and those episodes. Where can people find it?
So the Law Enforcement Life Coach, Sometimes Heroes Need Help podcast. It's on all the major platforms. Thank you, David. I sit down with Nicole. We talk about my alcoholism, my infidelity, and then basically how she got through it. The last episode is she shares her thoughts and her why, in which I thought was pretty powerful. She's really an amazing woman. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, she's the reason why I'm alive. And she is. And very blessed and very thankful to have this opportunity to share, David. You've got an amazing, amazing show, and the work that you're doing, you know, I'm just very grateful to have you as a friend, and I appreciate you doing what you're doing for our first responders.
Likewise, John, your book is one of those amazing tools that is part of your mission and your service, and it's selfless service, especially when you can share these kinds of powerful stories. And it's called Surviving Self-Inflicted Wounds, A Deputy's Life of Redemption. And that really sums it up. You've been through these enormous challenges and have overcome all of them to have a life of redemption and to share it out and to be of service to our brothers and sisters. So, John, it is always a pleasure. You are a hero in my book for doing what you do out there. And, you know, we use that word, or that word gets used too often and too loosely. But in this case, you know, you truly are touching lives. And I think it's a huge service, so thank you.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
Remember to like and subscribe, YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.